I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about whatever's in the news and whatever's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are freelance writer Jimmy Israel, media executive Nick Charles, civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, and syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete. I may jump in here or there, but for now, take it away, Jimmy.
Yo, thanks, Michelle. Fellas, welcome to the shop. How are we doing?
Pretty good.
Doing good, man.
Trying to keep cool.
Oh, man, I hear that. All right, well, check this out. Senators McCain and Obama addressing both the NAACP and the National Council of La Raza in an attempt to address issues important to both African Americans and Latinos, respectively. Now, Ruben, the R, you were at La Raza. Tell us about it, please.
Oh, it was good. I mean, it's been some time, maybe 10, 15 years since I've been to one of these things, because I've long since concluded that groups like the National Council of La Raza are often too cautious, too co-opted by foundation money and all that. Despite the stereotype that they are actually these far left-wing radical groups, they're actually pretty mainstream groups. It was worth going to for sure. It was worth seeing Obama and McCain engaging the audience reaction. Obama was a big hit, but McCain, to his credit, did something that Obama did not. He took questions from the audience, and that seemed to raise the opinion of a lot of folks as well. I will say this, that the difference I have realized in the last few days between pandering and leadership is if you go to a group like the NAACP or the National Council of La Raza and tell them only what they want to hear, that's pandering. But if you go to these groups and tell them what they need to hear, as both McCain and Obama did at the NAACP, that's leadership.
Now, Nick, I know you probably caught Obama at NAACP on TV, yes?
Yes, I did.
So what are your impressions?
My impression is that, you know, he is boring in for the kill. He is getting more and more steady. He's getting more and more presidential. What he did at the NAACP, referring to the church talking about personal responsibility and black fathers, was important for him to reiterate it at something like NAACP. And he got a huge ovation.
Nick, can I ask you something?
Sure.
One of the things that Senator Obama said in his speech is, you know, some folks think I talk too much about personal responsibility. Obviously, a reference to the criticism that, you know, Reverend Jesse Jackson kind of leveled at him, not in a very nice way, earlier in the week. How did folks respond to that?
Well, I think people responded very well to it. They were like, you know, he said, look, I'm not going to let up. And the people in the NAACP gave him a standing ovation, because a lot of people realize that the numbers, when you talk about the absentee black fathers, you talk about the dysfunction and diminution of the black family, of that so many folks, even though there is a middle class, there seems to be parallel universes where black people live. There's the middle class and the aspiring upper class, and then there's still the lower and underclass. And those folks somehow have not been addressed, have not been reached. You know, let's be honest. This is something Bill Cosby says all the time and gets into trouble. But coming from Obama, who's a lot seen as a lot more kind of a sympathetic figure, and also he's projecting a lot of leadership. And he doesn't say it in a way I don't think is being condescending. I still think that he should be saying it about everybody. But at NAACP, he held his ground and got a warm and very welcome ovation.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with Jimmy Israel, Nick Charles, Ruben Navarrete, and Arsalan Iftikhar in the barbershop. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. You know what? Speaking of Obama critics, Jackson's not over yet. Just when we thought it was safe to let your kids out, for some reason, TVNewser.com. got a hold of a transcript of that infamous Reverend Jesse Jackson appearance on Fox News, where he said he would like to, in so many words, disabilitate Obama down low. And not just that, but it also has him using the N-word in reference to the black community. Now, wait a second.
Hold on a second.
Let us pray. But let us also remember that it was just 2 years ago when he stood behind Michael Richards and asked us all to banish the word during the KKK Kramer debacle, where Michael Richards met hecklers with a blitzkrieg of N-bombs. Mm-hmm. A-Train.
Let's not also forget that the Reverend was one of the first to jump on, you know, the rapper Nas or Nasir Jones for, you know, the naming of his most recent album as the N-word. And, you know, even Nas said that he felt that, you know, the message of what he was trying to get across was being co-opted by professionals like the Reverend Jesse Jackson. And you know, I just think that it shows how irrelevant the Reverend has become. And
why does it prove that? What does one have to do with the other? Maybe it proves that he has a potty mouth. when he thinks that nobody's talking to him. But what's the relevance to him? What does that have to do with his relevance
he's
as a cultural, political
figure? Yeah, he's duplicitous.
But Arsalan raised the issue of relevance, and I'm saying I don't see the connection.
Well, I mean, in the sense that his hypocrisy is front and center here, it's obviously showing his relevance when he is, you know, trying to make national campaigns out of something that he obviously does not
practice in private.
Yeah.
Arsalan is right about the relevance aspect in this regard. If Jesse Jackson had criticized Barack Obama for something that when Barack Obama then went to the NAACP, the crowd, you know, didn't respond positively, then, you know, kudos to Jesse Jackson. He had it right. But he criticized Barack Obama for asking black folks to step up and take more responsibility. When Barack Obama reiterated that message at the NAACP, what was the reaction? Applause. Mm. So that tells me that whoever Jesse claims to be representing to these white corporations from whom he is extorting money, obviously, those are not the people in the room at the NAACP campaigns.
I'm sorry, but doesn't anybody find it interesting that okay, last week it was the whole comment about the, what was it that Jimmy said?
Disabilitating.
Thank you.
Down below.
And then this week it's the N-word. I mean, this is like, is it the gift that keeps on giving? Does anybody have any thoughts about that? What's up with that?
I think it was Fox News trying to take the high road and them having no choice under pressure but to release this. That's what I think. And
well, the issue's not Fox News. The issue is Jesse needs to stop talking. I mean,
well, I don't know if it's Jesse or Fox. I know, and I don't know about Fox News talking about Fox News taking the high road. But people who in glass houses should not throw stones. You'll never hear me say don't eat pork. You'll never hear me say don't use the N-word. In public, you know what not to say, and in private, you know what you can and cannot say in the privacy of your home or your friend's home or some gathering in the backyard barbecue. But if you're sitting at something with a microphone on, whether you think it's on or off, and you're talking to another guy with a suit on, you don't use that kind of language, because that's the kind of thing that really shows who you are and what kind of character you have.
Well, keeping it moving, Obama's in the crosshairs again, and as New York Magazine, the latest issue features a satirical cover of him and his wife, and not everybody gets the joke. Mm. We got some tape around here, don't we?
You know, actually we do. The New Yorker Magazine editor, David Remnick, spoke to our colleague Michelle Norris about this, and his argument is, look, it's satire. Get over it. Here it is.
The intention is to satirize not Barack Obama and not Michelle Obama, but in fact to hold a pretty harsh light up to the rumors, innuendos, lies about the Obamas that have come up, that they're somehow insufficiently patriotic or soft on terrorism.
Now, we have to talk to Arsalan about this because his head is about to explode off his neck. He's been emailing all of us about this all week. Arsalan, you thought it was funny, right?
No. You know, it was a close race between Jesse Jackson and the New Yorker for Atrian's Redunculus Award of the Week, and the New Yorker gets it. Now, best case scenario, this was satire on the cheap. Worst case, it was just patently offensive. To place Barack Obama in a white turban and garb, Muslim garb, with a matching Osama bin Laden portrait, with making Michelle Obama the militant African-American flag burning in the fireplace with the fist bump, you know, the analogy that I would make is, you know, with the whole Reverend John Hagee and Rod Parsley thing with John McCain, if we had seen a New Yorker cover with John McCain in a Ku Klux Klan white robe and Cindy McCain juggling bottles of Vicodin and Percocet, and that was called satire by the New Yorker, would they be able to get away with it? And I think it's quite clear as to where the line has to be drawn, and I think this was just redunculous.
Can I ask Arsalan a question?
Sure, yeah.
Did it hurt your feelings? I mean, you don't, that you wear standard business attire all the time with a few, you know, flourishes thrown in. But there are plenty of loyal Americans who wear, you know, ethnic and religious garb. And I know for me, as a person who wears her hair natural, I have to tell you, it kind of hurt my feelings to have that. Of course, she had the AK-47, and the boots and all that, you know, and the fatigues, all that is part of the gear. But it kind of hurt my feelings that this, in our a time in our history, to have like a natural thrown up as an example of why you're not a patriot or you're a radical. I don't know. It's funny. My reaction was kind of have my feelings hurt. I just wondered about you.
No, and you're absolutely right. And two very quick things. Senator Obama talked about this on Larry King Live. He said, you know, this is an insult to Muslim Americans, which it is. It's funny because, you know, there are polls that show that 1 in 10 Americans still believe that Barack Obama is a Muslim. And I feel like Jerry Seinfeld needs to pop out and say, not that there's anything wrong with it. You know, every time you hear the word Muslim now, and especially for the millions of American Muslims like myself who are out there, we're like, well, okay, he's not a Muslim. He's a Christian, but
What's wrong with that?
What's wrong with being a Muslim? You know, it's like being a Mormon or a Jew or a Buddhist or an atheist or anything else.
Nick, you wanted to say something.
I disagree, guys. I'm really sorry because my thing is I remember, you know, 16, 17 years ago when Art Spiegelman drew the cover with the Hasidic guy kissing their sister with the dreadlocks.
Right.
And that created a lot of problems because, you know, Hasidim are not supposed to touch women, and they're not supposed to be kissing other women who are not their wives, who are women of color, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I look at it, and of course, you know, the Angela Davis do, you know, as the symbol of revolution and, you know, transgression. Yeah, that's an old trope. But the fact of the matter is, you know, I'm not going to cancel my subscription. I don't know if anybody else has any, but I do. And I'm not going to cancel it because my thing about is that I get it.
Right.
And I don't think it was something, knowing the New Yorker, knowing the people, a place where Seymour Hersh works, it can't be a place that would take a shot up at Barack Obama like that. So my thing about it is that they did this because they really thought it was satire. And if satire cannot be done at the New Yorker, it definitely can't be done anywhere else.
It's Ruben. I started off when the controversy first broke more in line with, let's all be sophisticated because it is, after all, the New Yorker. You know, let's think about what the New Yorker's trying to say. And I thought about, the more I thought about it, I thought I was giving them a pass. And I realized ultimately that you can think about this stuff too much, and you got to go sometimes with your gut level reaction. And for folks who don't understand, they saw this as a slam against Obama. This is not about race. This is about patriotism. It's about challenging somebody's patriotism, as Michelle mentioned. And I think that this is tantamount to hitting below the belt. And I think that it is a very ugly and dangerous portrait that's been drawn out. But I'll tell you what, two things went through my mind. One is, if you got all the people in a room together at the New Yorker who made the decision to put this cover out there, I bet you would not find a single black person in that room. I know you wouldn't find a single Hispanic in that room.
Be careful, okay? Be careful. But there are a lot of organizations. A lot of organizations you can say that about. A lot of organizations, a lot of media organizations you can say that about.
We're talking about this organization, though. And the New Yorker, if you're going to make that kind of judgment, I want to see the diversity of your staff to make sure that this is not a bunch of white liberals with a gigantic blind spot. Secondly, I will eat all these words if you can produce for me, during the 2000 campaign when Joe Lieberman was running for vice president, if the New Yorker came forward with an anti-Jewish cartoon that went after a Jewish American soft spot, which is this notion that somehow they put the interests of Israel before the interests of the U.S., I'll eat my hat. I don't think they put out that kind of cover. Let's play the game by one set of rules, and let's not toy with things like this. This is really dangerous stuff. It isn't about race. It's about saying that, in this case, people of the Obama, you know, background, somehow that these people are not patriotic. And I got to say, I'm a little more suspicious than I was at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Ladies and gentlemen, the R. well, in other diversity news, the NFL has an interesting new approach to diversity. They're hiring experts to tell if their ballers are flashing gang signs on the football field. Now, me personally, I think this is ugly because not only do fraternities have hand signals, but regions like Atlanta and even Cleveland have certain hand signals that they throw up. Different coasts have different hand signals that they throw up in pride and or in recognition, you know, West Side or whatever. And, you know, this is a little troubling for me. I think it's kind of ugly. Hey, Trent, you got something for this?
I just think it's kind of stupid. If you look at most, you know, NFL teams, they have like 400-page playbooks, and they have so many signals that I'm sure, like, they're the most lily-white assistant coaches is throwing up Blood, Crips, Vice Lord sign signals without even knowing it. I mean, I think that, you know, this is kind of pointless to, like, send scouts out there to see if, you know, the wideout or the tight end, you know, is flashing something. I think there's better ways to spend NFL resources than by doing this.
Yeah, give me that job, because that's like a cushy gig. Does it come with medical? Yo, Nick, man,
it would be a great job for some of the young boys who are in gangs in L.A. who don't have a job. For
them,
they should be the folks who are doing that.
But there's actually a silver lining here. Yeah, go ahead.
But there's two things that prompted this. The first one was Darren Williams, the Denver quarterback who got shot last year, and is still unsolved murder in Colorado. On a night they went out partying, and he got shot in a limousine. And it was supposedly that some of it was gang-affiliated or related. And then you had Paul Pierce in one of the games throwing up a sign from his neighborhood in Inglewood, which was a gang sign. And so the NFL is trying to be proactive. I think they're going overboard, but they have a point because, let's be honest, none of us really know what it looks like. I don't. You know, I know about the middle finger and the sign for not drowning. That's about it. So unless somebody's throwing up a sign from Patty, I'm not with it.
Right,
at the same time, I can see where they're concerned, because let's be honest, a lot of these young guys who are 21, 22, the neighborhoods they come from, the communities they come from, there are those influences. A lot of them have gotten away from them through sport. Some of them mm-hmm. have not. And we always hear about, you know, some, and back end we hear about some athletes laundering money or being involved in this organization or that organization that is doing, you know, legal business. And so the NFL is trying to be squeaky, squeaky clean, particularly after the whole Pac-Man Jones affair. They're going overboard.
Okay, but let me think about it from the other way. If they said, you know what, we're going to police their lockers to make sure that they don't have any Ku Klux Klan hoods in their lockers. You know me personally, I'd rather say, okay, instead of doing the whole thing with the hood, why don't you work on their heads? And say, why do you, you're a multimillionaire, you have a talent,
why not
work on the person and talk about why you can, what you can do to break that cycle?
All right, the problem is with the community. Somebody needs to say, you know, there needs to be a stigma attached to that where I'm no longer going to buy your product. I'm not going to go to your games. I'm not going to buy your CDs. I'm not going to support you. I'm not going to go to your movies. But you can't embody these people and empower these people if they're going to be working against the best interests of the community. Let's stop babying our millionaires.
You know what? Right about now, I'm not blooding or cripping, but I am throwing up deuces. I'm throwing up deuces as in two fingers, as in peace. I think that's a wrap. Thank you for being in the barbershop. And I have to throw it back over to the lady of the house, Michelle Martin.
I did not understand one single thing he just said, except that Michelle Martin. But
That was a verbal gang sign.
Okay, I got you. Okay.
That's right. Look out. Look out.
Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist who writes for TheRoot.com and TV1 Online. He joined us from member station WCPN in Cleveland. Ruben Navarrete writes for the San Diego Union-Tribune and CNN.com. He joined us from San Diego. Nick Charles is vice president of digital content for BET.com. He joined us from our New York bureau. And Arsalan Iftikhar is a civil rights attorney and contributing editor for Islamica magazine. He was here with me in Washington. Gentlemen, thank you all so much.
Peace.
Thank you, Michelle.
Yep, yep.